5. The Masterwork. Dr. Hyde sat at a large oak table strewn with gears, keys, small metal bones, and two tiny marble eyes. Looking through a telescoping lens strapped over his left eye, he connected a silver wing to a metallic sparrow's body. Behind him, outside the mouth of the cave, palm trees waved in the wind. He didn't know the name of this island, even though he'd been living on it for more than 8 years. He rarely ventured outside, avoiding the burning sun as much as possible. His food and all his scientific materials were brought to him by dark-skinned men and women in grass skirts. He looked at them curiously, wondering how to make them taller and stronger. As with all people, their bones were weak. The human skeleton was such a poor design. He still knew so little about those who employed him, only that their leader was called the Guildmaster, and that there were soldiers in the guild's employ on the island too. The insignia on their grey uniforms was a clock face inside a triangle. He tapped the wing with his finger, pleased to see it move smoothly up and down. The clockwork bird would be his newest pet. He still missed his hound, though. Magnus had been strengthened by the tincture, but age had eventually taken him. However, he had sired puppies, and with the right alterations, Hyde had made them much more powerful and perfectly obedient. They were being used by the soldiers to patrol the island. Three chimpanzees watched him guardedly from inside their iron cages. Two of the creatures had metal arms, the third a metal jaw and skull. Sticking out of each of their shoulders was an iron bolt. Two cages were empty. A tinge of sadness struck Hyde. He had been fond of their occupants, had even named them, Isaac and Galilee. But a failed batch of the tincture had ended their lives rather brutally. From then on, he stopped giving his subjects names. He squinted at the three remaining chimps. There was something in the way their cages were stacked, one on top of the next, that gave him pause. An idea began forming, but he dismissed it, determined to complete the task at hand. Perfecting the tincture for these cousins of humans was enough of a challenge for now, and would require much more time and materials. He marvelled at how easily his requests were filled. Any chemical, any kind of metal, any substance he asked for was brought to him. Sometimes it would come a month later, but it would arrive. When he mentioned to one of the soldiers that an assistant would be helpful, 3 weeks later they delivered a Liverpool-raised boy named Griff. They had found him on a deserted island, half-starved. It hadn't taken the boy long to learn to follow Hyde's orders. His skin had turned yellow, though. Hyde noted that perhaps he shouldn't conduct experiments on his staff. It would be hard to find and train another assistant if the boy perished. He placed both marble eyes in their sockets, and the sparrow seemed suddenly alive. Hyde unclipped the telescoping lens from his forehead and turned a key, winding the clockwork inside the bird. He set the sparrow down, and it walked in a circle and chirped 3 times. Success. A great boom sounded, and Hyde looked up. It seemed to have come from the direction of the docks, several hundred yards away, down the hill and partly hidden from the cave by palm trees. He shuffled to the door and saw that another steamship had docked. Steamships arrived every few days. It was nothing impressive. He peered a bit further along the beach, and was pleased to see that the airship Vesuvius had docked at the large black iron tower, a massive floating grey cloud harnessed to the earth. He'd seen the dirigible Henry Gifford had used to fly from Paris to Trapp, but the Vesuvius was 5 times larger. The steam-powered propeller spun slowly. He was always impressed by the Vesuvius. It was as if he was seeing the future. Maybe a new shipment of powders had arrived. After a few minutes, Hyde returned to his table and stroked the sparrow. As he did, he thought of the Society of Science in London. Those weak-minded men would be amazed at what he had accomplished in the past few years. He still seethed when he thought of them and the parliamentarians who had branded him a scientific blasphemer. "What are you dreaming about?" A voice startled him. Its purr raised the hairs on the back of his neck. He turned toward the woman he knew only as Ingrid. His analytic mind wished he could measure the beats of his skipping heart. and use that data to ascertain whether or not it was love. Oh, he was being foolish again. Surely he was too old for love. "What do I dream about?" he answered, and cleared his throat. "Oh, it's complex. Why, just this morning I nearly had a wonderful idea, but I let it pass. Better to keep my mind on the tincture. I do see so many things of wonder yet to be created."
"Like this," she said, raising her left arm.
Her hook had been replaced by a gleaming metal hand. Her brass-hinged knuckles opened and closed quietly. Even her golden fingernails were perfect. "My design," Hyde thought, "added to her beauty." She'd been stronger than any patient he'd ever encountered, keeping her trusting eyes open while he performed the operation, not once crying out as he attached piano wires to her tendons.
"Is it still functioning properly?"
She clicked her fingers together. "Yes, of course, thanks to you." She bent and kissed Hyde's cheek. He felt himself go red.
"I'm coming so close to realizing the full potential of the tincture," he sputtered.
At this, one of the chimpanzees let out a howl. Hyde locked eyes with the animal. They were even more intelligent than he had surmised. Maybe he could augment their jaws and tongue so they could speak. A new voice box? "Would that you were saying, Doctor?"
"Oh, yes, yes. The tincture is nearly ready for human consumption, and I have decided, after all these years, to give it a name. Lycaonium."
"Ah, that is a clever name." Hyde raised an eyebrow.
"You know why I chose it?"
"I've read the Greek myths, dear Doctor. It can only be a reference to King Lycaon. He sacrificed a child to Zeus and was turned into a wolf."
"Well, then, you understand the reference. I do love my symbols. Lycaonium turns creatures into stronger, more bestial versions of themselves. It seems there will be other uses, too, which I am still investigating."
"The Guildmaster will be pleased to know that."
"I have appreciated his assistance. Your support has allowed me to push past the limits of modern science. I possess a much greater understanding of the inner chemical workings of the human and animal brain."
"You must be very proud of yourself." Her tone made him pause, but she gave him a guileless smile.
"I would like to know your thoughts," he said. "Are we just the sum of the chemical reactions in the brain? Or is there more? Is there, as a man of science, I hesitate to say this, a spirit in us that can be tapped into?"
"Of course. It is our will to live. What it can be used for, I imagine, is boundless." Hyde nodded.
"I believe I've found a way to access this energy."
"The Guildmaster celebrates your every success."
"When will I meet him?"
"In time, I suppose, if it's necessary." She stroked the wing of the sparrow, and it let out a little cheep. "Very pretty. Will you make one for me?"
"Of course, anything."
He caught his breath.
"Within reason, of course."
She tapped her metal fingers against her cheek. "I am always reasonable. And your sparrow reminds me, I do have a new side project for you." She made a motion with her good hand, and four soldiers rose from where they'd been hiding in the foliage outside the cave. They marched in, carrying a lumpy object on a stretcher.
"What's this?"
Hyde asked. But as they rolled the object off the stretcher onto his operating table, he couldn't restrain a shudder. The thing they carried was a man with no arms and no legs. His dark hair and beard were matted, and his eyes were closed.
"This is a valuable member of the Guild. I wonder if you could repair him?"
"Repair him?"
Hyde watched the man's chest slowly rise and fall.
How is it that he still lives?"
"Oh, an infusion into his bloodstream of some sugars. We have other doctors in our employ. He does wake occasionally to eat and to swear. Be prepared for that. He has a temper."
"What's his name?"
"You don't need to know a man's name in order to operate on him, do you?" No, you're right. But I say no more. I have faith that you will find a way to help him. I will consider the matter closed.
She made another gesture, and the soldiers turned as one and left the cave.
And the question I asked when I first walked in was not an idle one, she said. You have done so much for the guild. It is time we repaid you. Is there something you dream of constructing?
He was frozen, his mind still in shock. He stared at the new patient.
How could he possibly put that man back together? Pay attention to me, Cornelius.
The doctor looked at her. She was smiling.
You have such a wandering mind. The guildmaster, like you, loves his symbols. He generously offers you all of our resources to create a masterwork.
A masterwork?
He looked at his sparrow, the flasks that held the tincture, the chimpanzees in their cages. In a flash, his earlier idea became completely clear to him.
Yes, Hyde said slowly. Yes, I imagine a device, a weapon unlike any ever used before.